Hello and welcome back. This is Insight is Capital. I'm your host, Pierre Daly. Fixed income investing has gotten tricky. Inflation's still hanging around. Central banks are in no rush to cut rates, and bond markets feel like they're on a roller coaster. For investors who depend on steady income, this environment isn't just uncomfortable, it's frustrating. That's why many are taking a closer look at collateralized loan obligations, or CLOs. These aren't just some exotic Wall Street invention. They're built on a foundation of floating rates to large companies, and they've shown real resilience through market ups and downs. Because of their structure, CLOs sit at the top of the payment hierarchy, meaning they're first in line to get paid, making them a compelling option for income without the long duration risk that's plaguing traditional bonds right now. In a world where higher for longer seems to be the new normal, CLOs offer something refreshing: yield without stretching too far for credit risk and without getting burned by rate spikes. Our guest today is Mark Jaros, head of credit alternatives at BMO Global Asset Management. Mark has spent his career working with sophisticated credit strategies that most investors rarely get to see up close. He's here to demystify collateralized loan obligations, to explain how they've performed through different market cycles, and help us understand what role they could play in a diversified portfolio. If you've always found terms like tranches and waterfall structures intimidating, you're in for a straightforward, jargon-free breakdown.
This is Insight is Capital. Join us in our fireside chats with some of the most fascinating people in finance to discuss their insights on life, markets, macro, investment strategy, and much more.
Mark, welcome. It is great to have you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Pierre, for including me in this conversation today. Much like you said, that this is an asset class that has existed for several decades. And while it is filled with a lot of acronyms that might be overwhelming to some, I promise to break this down to kind of bare basic kind of vernacular or jargon that most will understand.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Mark, I wonder if before we get started, if you could talk about how you got into the business in the first place, the arc of your career, and what you're working on these days.
Absolutely. So I've spent the bulk of my career in credit and structured credit. It's been well over 20 years that I've been involved in this asset class. And when I say that, both directly and indirectly, I've looked at CLOs and structured credit, and have also looked at the underlying loans that go into these vehicles. So I actually got my career started right before the global financial crisis, where some assets that are very similar in profile, which we will get into during a conversation. And it was during that time I really got to go deep into the kind of tranching and structuring of these assets, and was able to participate in the restructuring of the largest restructuring in Canada, $32 billion of frozen asset-backed commercial paper. And following that, I then spent some time doing some consulting work and investment banking work, particularly on the credit side, which led me to Canada Pension Plan, where I was working on the private credit investment team. And then joined BMO GAM about a few years ago to help build out their credit platform. And within the past 3 years, we've started with the most liquid end of the liquidity spectrum, and that being CLOs. So we're going to be talking about how these are actively traded, how these are liquid securities, and how for the first time, these securities that have been predominantly institutionally bought and sold are now being made available to retail investors.
Mark, I can't help thinking that you know, your timing of getting into the field was a trial by fire.
Absolutely. It was, I often joke around that it was the best of times and the worst of times for someone very young and early in their career. It was a great learning experience to understand, you know, what can go wrong and what did go wrong. And I absolutely had learned a ton about risk management as it relates to all things credit.
this is such a humbling business at times, and it, that's really where, you know, the greatest lessons are learned. Mark, for listeners who may be hearing the term CLO for the first time, can you give us a clear, plain language explanation of what a CLO is and how it's structured?
The best way I like to think about a CLO is to think of it as being similar to a very simplified bank. On the asset side of the balance sheet are only one type of asset, and these are corporate loans. And if you think about those corporate loans or focus on those, these are first lien senior secured loans. So what that means is these individual loans are at the top of that corporate entity's waterfall. So they are the first to get paid back in the event of a bankruptcy or restructuring. And so think about 200 to 300 corporate loans residing on the asset side of the balance sheet. And how does a CLO fund those purchases? Well, they issue liabilities. And these liabilities are rated by a rating agency, with the safest top of the waterfall being the AAA tranche, going all the way down to BB. Sometimes there is a B-rated note. And the very bottom of the waterfall is an equity tranche. That is an unrated tranche, and it's typically held by a CLO manager. Now, it is worth pointing out that a CLO is actively managed by a portfolio manager. And so these portfolio managers will scour the loan market and looking for loans to optimize their balance sheet. And so these managers will have massive teams of credit analysts that are doing their quantitative and qualitative analysis of the loans to ensure that each one meets the standards that they're looking for that reside in the CLO.
A lot of people hear structured product and they immediately think complex and risky. And to some degree, complexity is definitely a factor. But the reason for the complexity is ultimately for risk management.
What's worth talking about is the fact that these are rated structures. These are rated notes. So one might hear the word tranche or hear some of these acronyms for the first time and perhaps be a little bit taken aback in that it's the first time they've seen these words. But rating agencies, and we are referring to the largest rating agencies across the globe, are the ones that look at the underlying structures. They are performing their quantitative and qualitative analysis of these structures, and they're assigning a rating to the liabilities. And so when one is looking at a AAA rating, it is comforting to know that these are, you know, put through a very rigorous modeling process before a rating comes out. It is also worth mentioning that at the AAA level, there have been zero defaults. And so these asset classes, the CLO, has been in existence for well over 30 years. It survived the global financial crisis, and it has weathered multiple storms along the way, and it has proven itself to be a resilient asset class.
I want to differentiate between some of the confusion that occurs out there in terms of you know, you mentioned acronyms. Collateralized debt obligations, or CDOs, became infamous during the 2008 financial crisis. And CLOs often get lumped into that same category just because the acronyms are similar. But can you walk us through the key differences? I think you may have already touched on it a little bit, but can you walk us through the key differences between CLOs and CDOs and why their histories diverged so sharply?
It is unfortunate that they do share a very similar acronym. And in many respects, they are similar in that they use the securitization process. However, they are very dissimilar in the underlying structuring and management. And so I had spoken about the early years of my career where I was involved in some of those securities, or particularly CDOs. And so CDOs, first of all, the underlying assets were subprime residential mortgages. And so these were mortgages that had very high loan to value. So when you think about your mortgage or my mortgage, one typically has to have a certain percentage of equity before they go to the bank and receive a loan. It was not unusual for these loans, for these mortgages, to have a de minimis amount of equity in the loan. And CLOs are actively managed, meaning the portfolio manager can sell out of a loan if it no longer has conviction in that name and replace it with another loan. CDLs were not, they didn't have that active management. So there was no regular review process. There were no financials coming in. It was really a flow-through type vehicle. And that at contrast to CLOs that do receive financial statements from the underlying obligors that do have reporting. And, we as portfolio managers on our side are also able to look into a CLO and double click and to see all the underlying holdings to see how they're performing. And so it was the high LTV, the static vehicle, and the lack of governance and portfolio management that really kind of set it apart from what we see now in CLOs.
Those are profound distinctions. I mean, because if investors carry that 2008 baggage into the conversation, they might actually miss the fact that CLOs held up. If you're getting into the CLO market now at the current levels that we're at, the economic climate that we're in, you're capturing today's yields, first of all, and those obligations are expected to repay without any difficulty. But to your point, if something happens following this period, then there are even opportunities for asymmetric investments where assets get repriced temporarily and an active manager can actually step in there and take advantage of what looks like a distressed situation.
And you hit the nail on the head there. And that's actually one of the things that we look at when we think about investing in CLOs. The universe of CLO managers is currently around 120 active North American managers. And so when I look to an individual portfolio manager, I look at their team, I look at their history, I look at their ability to trade, and I'll ask those very questions. And I'll ask them, are you looking opportunistically at credits as perhaps one is downgraded from, let's say, a single B to a triple B? What is your thesis? Do you trade out of that name, or do you re-underwrite and hold that position based on your conviction? And so what one will find is there is a wide variety of approaches CLO managers take in structuring these vehicles. So it really does take a understanding of not only the managers, but their approach, their thesis, understanding what their credit analysts are looking at. Do they have a tilt towards a specific industry? And again, it's part of this dynamic approach that CLOs undertake, which for me is very exciting. These have yielded very attractive returns. And again, to echo what you said, and we'll probably say it several times during this conversation, they have really proven themselves to be resilient through various cycles.
Yeah, so you get the yield to maturity on the current portfolio. And there's also, opportunistically, there's also situations where a credit fund manager could get into asymmetric opportunities, mispriced opportunities, dislocations that occur. And that doesn't change the fabric of the existing portfolio, right? I mean, the existing portfolio, the fabric of the existing portfolio is to collect the yield to maturity. But then with those situations where assets can get mispriced, there's that opportunity to add that on to the portfolio. How does the tranche system and waterfall payment structure help protect the highest rated investors?
AAA being the first of the liability structure, and for the viewers that are not familiar with the rating system, AAA starts at the top. Below AAA, we have AA. Below that, we have single A. Below that, we have triple B. AAA is the first to receive any principal and interest payment from the CLO manager. So as interest payments are coming in from the underlying loans, I have referred to this pool of 200 to 300 loans. Those underlying businesses are paying their regular interest payments. It then gets aggregated by a trustee that then distributes that interest payment. Because we are AAA holders, we're the first to receive proceeds. After we've been paid, and only after we've been paid, does it then trickle down to the lower tranches. And so one will often hear the word subordination, or a simplified way of thinking of it is cushioning. The AAA has ample cushioning below it against any losses that may occur. So any losses that do occur, if there is one underlying company that does not make its interest payment of those 200 loans, it's actually the last equity tranche that bears that loss. So losses flow from the bottom up, whereas interest and principal payments flow from the top down.
Interesting.
And so the AAA tranche, on average, has about 40% cushioning below it. So one would need to see 40% of the underlying pool have absolute losses with zero recovery for it to see any type of impairment. Another term that our listeners might come across is over-collateralization. And so what does that mean? Our liabilities have more assets relative to the underlying notes. And so given that the underlying loans have ample loan to value behind them, the liabilities, the tranches on CLOs, have ample over-collateralization to buffer themselves against any potential losses or defaults. And again, this is where we really look to perform our due diligence at underlying CLO portfolio managers to see how have they weathered the various cycles. What has their view been when there are certain sectors that are experiencing some turbulent waters. CLO managers do have the ability to shift again within the rating agency criteria. They can shift their investment criteria. And so these are some of the questions that we ask and we probe when we're thinking about investing with the individual CLO portfolio manager.
I suspect a lot of advisors and investors do not know these distinctions. The gravity of over-collateralization, for example, hasn't made it to the aha moment for them yet. And of course, access to CLOs is very new. In terms of democratization of CLOs in the marketplace, I want to discuss, you also like the opportunity in you mentioned in the investment grade universe, the BBB rated CLOs. Other than the rating difference between BBB and AAA tranches, what's the risk reward of considering an allocation to BBB CLOs?
An investor can achieve substantial yield pickup by going down to the BBB tranche. It does require an additional level of analysis and scrutiny for someone like myself and my team when we do look at BBB tranches. And this is where work on an underlying portfolio manager, a CLO manager, really is important. The variance in returns at the BBB level really starts to widen relative to AAA. So what do I mean by that? When one is looking at a AAA tranche, the variance in returns or yields is quite narrow. As you go down in tranches, you start to see that variance widen. And really, it's a function of the underlying CLO manager and their ability to trade in and out of names. It's their ability to focus on certain sectors that they may have a strength in. And so we perform a very kind of robust quantitative and qualitative analysis on our end to ensure that we're comfortable with embarking on a BBB tranche. But it could be well over 100, 120 basis points, depending on where we are in the market and where spreads are at, that one can achieve in terms of additional spread pickup relative to AAA. The universe of BBB buyers is also a lot smaller, as is the inventory for BBB tranches. So I think it is worth discussing the AAA universe historically has been dominated by banks, life insurance companies. Japanese banks have been the largest buyers of AAA paper. And really, it's a function of the underlying rating, the fact that these are AAA rated liabilities, and the fact that one is getting substantial yield pickup over their, let's say, equivalents, treasuries, which are no longer AAA, AAA equivalents. So, perhaps I'll talk a little bit about the CLO ETFs that we've seen over the past few years that have come to market. And so it wasn't until around the period of COVID that we witnessed the resilience of the underlying AAA paper. What do I mean by that? When COVID occurred, we witnessed increased volatility in all markets. And what investors had noticed during COVID is that the bid-ask spread for AAA CLO paper had actually remained tight. And so what does that mean is that there was this active market of AAA buyers and sellers that were continuing to buy paper, and that kept the paper trading at near par levels. And so, particularly in the U.S., we saw the birth of the CLO AAA ETF, where it allowed retail investors to gain access to the CLO AAA, but they gave them access to it in an ETF wrapper, meaning one could get access to this traditionally institutional quality paper in a T+1 vehicle. And so we at BMO GAM launched our first CLO AAA earlier this year, and have also launched a BBB CLO ETF as well for those investors looking for additional yield pickup.
That's interesting. You know, I recall the period in 2020 when parts of the credit market froze. But so to hear the CLO market was liquid and the spreads were tight, that points to the resilience of these assets during what are otherwise, you know, these heavy drawdown periods. And part of the reason for that is that when markets are liquidating, investors who are, for example, margined have margin calls, and they have to sell assets that are otherwise performing. You know, they sell gold. They sell the most secure assets often to cover their margin losses. Institutional investors are the largest holders of CLOs. They didn't find themselves in that situation where they have to sell perfectly great assets in order to cover calls.
And you raise a very interesting point, Pierre, and I'm going to expound on that as a part of our analysis.
I mean, it's remarkable.
As a part of the work that we performed prior to launch, we look particularly at the recent Liberation Day to see what was happening in the institutional market, particularly with dealers that do trade CLO AAA paper. It is worth noting that these aren't exchange traded, meaning one can't go to their online brokerage to buy a AAA CLO tranche. These are traded OTC. One needs to be a qualified institutional buyer, meaning you have to have 100 million to be able to trade these tranches. So we had dissected what had happened during that period during Liberation Day, and we noticed some of the largest CLO ETFs did have massive redemptions. And what we did is we kind of double-clicked on that to get a broader view as to what happened. And in conversations with dealers, we realized it was actually asset managers and hedge fund managers that were using AAA CLO as their HQLA, high-quality liquid asset. So instead of having treasury or other short-term T-bills as their cash equivalent to meet margin calls, they were using AAA paper as their HQLA. And so when we looked at what happened to spreads during that sell-off, the spreads remained steady. There were no disruptions to the CLO bid-ask spreads at the AAA level.
You didn't get the dislocation.
No, you're right.
Interesting.
And there have been some very interesting studies that looked at the addition of CLOs, particularly AAA CLOs, to one's portfolio. And the study looked at a variety of different asset mixes. And what the output revealed was decreased Sharpe ratio, increased expected return, and overall the bumping out of the efficient frontier. And so, again, we do see lower correlation to other markets. For many investors, they may not have exposure to underlying corporate loans. So this is a great entry point to get exposure to corporate loans. But again, when you think about an individual CLO having 200 to 300 individual loans, a CLO ETF may have dozens and dozens of CLO tranches. So you're multiplying that by 200 to 300. So one could get exposure to tens of thousands of corporate loans where they otherwise would not be able to get that level of diversification otherwise.
You know, it's exciting to find out that probably the main reasons why they've been such an in-demand area of investment for institutional investors, because of the diversification benefits that they bring to portfolio construction. It's also notable that CLOs are floating rate. And how does that feature change the risk and return profile in today's interest rate landscape? I think, you know, we're grappling with traditional bonds, which very simply, when interest rates go up, they go down, and vice versa. Duration has been a difficult challenge to tackle. So if you're looking for an alternative, the floating rate structure of CLOs actually provides a solution to that problem.
That's right. CLO tranches are floating rate, and it's a function of the underlying holdings, the underlying corporate loans being floating rate. So what does that mean? Every 3 months, they will reset. If underlying interest rates do not change, then the return one receives will effectively be unchanged. As rates increase, our yield will increase. As rates decrease, our yield decreases. Now, investors may ask, well, that doesn't sound very attractive in a declining rate environment. However, the way I like to think about, or the way I express it, is that in a declining rate environment, these actually become more of a credit positive, or it becomes a less likely to default kind of characteristic. You have to remember, these are underlying corporate loans that are paying floating rate. So if that individual ABC company has now, during a declining rate environment, their interest burden has now been lessened as a result of a declining rate, which means the burden on them has decreased. And that does flow through to the underlying investor and underlying tranche investors. In an increasing rate environment, we do get the benefit of increased yield. However, what it means is we are then sharpening our lens and sharpening our pencils as portfolio managers to ensure the underlying portfolio manager of the CLO is really performing their credit analysis to ensure the underlying obligors are able to meet the increased interest burden on the loans. And to kind of echo your comment about duration, these are low duration products. And so it's a great addition to one's portfolio that may have a combination of fixed term, diversified corporate and government bonds. Adding CLOs is a great way to bring in that duration profile.
We spent decades educating investors on the simple reality that when rates go up, bond values go down, and when rates go down, bond values go up. And now we're in this period where there's a shifting regime. You know, we now we have to spend some time getting investors back on the side of understanding or relating that higher rates mean higher returns and lower rates mean lower returns and higher rates mean higher risk and lower rates mean lower risk.
I've found over the past few months, educating investors on CLOs, the benefits of CLOs, what it could do to one's portfolio, having them understand the exposure that they're getting access to, that there has been 30 years of performance, that it has been, institutional investors, whether they be banks or pension funds that have been investing in this, and having them understand, the overall benefits of adding this to a portfolio, regardless of the rate environment. And kind of coming full circle, most importantly, how these are not like their CDO cousin that shares the same acronym.
Yeah. But we've been living through one of the most aggressive rate hike cycles in decades. Are investors worried about locking into bonds that could lose value if rates move again? This sounds like a completely different proposition. And no investment is risk-free. I know we've spent a fair bit of time talking about, the qualities of CLOs. What are the key risks that investors should understand when it comes to CLOs, and how do you address those risks in portfolio construction?
CLOs are pools of underlying loans, so there is underlying credit risk. We had to address the fact that these are floating rate. So as rates go down, it becomes less of an interest burden to the obligors. However, as rates go up, that interest obligation does become an increased burden. And that's where we rely heavily on the expertise of the underlying CLO portfolio managers. But we at BMO GAM, our products are really only focused on the investment grade tranches. And what we have found is that they have performed well through various market crises, and that liquidity was present when one wanted to redeem. There's also complexity risk. These are securitized products. We had talked a little bit about securitization, the pooling and aggregating of loans and issuing of liabilities against those loans. These are very heavily reliant on quantitative models and rating agency models as well. And then lastly, there's economic and systemic risk, meaning, as we saw with the global financial crisis, when the chips start to fall, there's this ripple effect, and we did see that with CDOs. However, back to our original comment, CLOs had actually performed quite well during a downturn, and in that it allowed portfolio managers to acquire loans deeply discounted values. So, they've demonstrated stability and resilience during volatile markets.
Even though we've had situations in history where they could have been pressured, they made it through very strongly.
With over 30 years of historical data for us to look through, and particularly over the past, I would say, 5 years, we've seen the data available to investors really it's become more readily accessible, and the data is a lot more robust from, let's say, a couple decades ago. We're seeing more data providers, more analytic firms, employing AI and employing, their own quantitative analysis in helping us as portfolio managers in making decisions, in looking through to the portfolio. One of the things I really do appreciate about CLOs is the full transparency. And we didn't really talk to that, in that at any one moment, I can go on to Bloomberg and look through to a CLO manager's holdings, and I can see that full list, which is live and current, to show exactly what they're holding. So we can see their exposures. We can see if they are trading and how they're trading, and we can overlay that relative to other managers as well. And just the fact that the largest institutional managers have been the largest buyers of this paper and continue to be the largest buyers. Not to say one should follow where pensions and hedge funds participate. But again, just, given that that's where the smart money has been going, coupled with the phenomenal performance, we think it's an attractive asset class for retail investors as well.
Why have they been largely inaccessible to Canadian retail investors until recently? What has changed to make them more available now?
We had spoken a bit about the US CLO AAA ETF that formed post-COVID. And as a result of that, there were many other US asset managers that issued CLO ETFs. And it was in 2024 that BMO GAM had decided to embark on a path to issue a CLO ETF.
BMO ETFs recently launched two CLO funds in an ETF wrapper, ticker ZAAA, ZAAA, which provides exposure to AAA CLOs, as well as launching a BBB CLO ETF, ZBBZ. How do each of these ETF strategies work and what can investors expect?
So our initial launch of the ZAAA product is meant to be a AAA-only ETF. So we had talked about being first in the payment line for interest and principal payments. The prospectus does allow us to go down to single A, but we don't foresee a need to go down to single A. We do want to keep this one predominantly AAA focused. The follow-on product, which is ZBBZ, which is our BBB fund, is also investment grade, meaning we will never go below BBB. We have the ability to invest in higher rated tranches. So we may invest in some single A, some double A, and perhaps even some triple A product. And our rationale behind that was to allow investors to get additional yield pickup with T plus one liquidity and only a kind of marginal, kind of pickup in risk. So again, both are investment grade rated. Both are floating rate products and both provide investors access to CLO tranches, but we want to offer investors a kind of varying risk return profile in terms of their access point. And what we have found is some investors are investing in both products. Some investors don't mind the additional risk return profile in going down to the BBB profile. And again, given that retail investors can't otherwise access these products through their online brokerage or through their financial advisors, we want to give them differing access points to these institutional quality products.
It provides the added range for investors to cherry pick between the two main investment grade categories, but having it 75% BBB captures the yield pickup from the BBB trench, but then you can opportunistically climb the rating ladder.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. What we have found in speaking with both institutional and retail clients, they appreciate the investment grade stamp. So they want to know that the underlying tranches are still AAA, or rather, sorry, are still investment grade, but have the ability to pick their risk return spot, whether it's a combination of the two or whether they're going to pivot to either AAA or BBB. We're giving them that option to invest where best suits their needs. Many investors were also bound by ratings, particularly certain institutional investors based on their own investment criteria are bound to invest in investment grade quality paper.
It feels like there's been this quiet opening of a door that was closed for years. And I imagine that for many advisors, this is the first time they're seeing a product that gives them direct access. For advisors and investors thinking about portfolio construction, in what types of scenarios might CLO exposure at the AAA and BBB level make sense as part of a diversified income strategy?
In creating these products, we wanted the relative attractiveness of both AAA and BBB CLOs to be high yield distributing funds. So both of these products do distribute on a monthly basis. So they are distributing cash on a regular basis. One achieves substantial yield pickup over other kind of relative credit products. However, we're offering them in a fully diversified format. And what we have found in terms of use cases, we've noticed that investors are using this as a complement to their fixed income portfolio. So as we talked about, they're using this to shorten their duration. They're using this to get access to a portfolio of underlying loans that they otherwise would not have gotten access to. We had talked about the fact that these are globally known asset managers. And these same asset managers do offer private credit funds where the hurdle or the initial investment amount might be a little too rich for someone like myself or some of our listeners. And so by allowing investors to access these same asset managers in a daily liquid ETF, it's a great diversifier into credit alternatives. And we've also have found some investors using this as a component of their HQLA, the high quality liquid asset component. So they're using this as a component to provide cash for short-term needs or needs for the foreseeable future.
If I'm an advisor listening to this and I'm thinking about client outcomes, income stability, risk mitigation, diversification, this is the point where I'd want to connect those dots to see if it fits.
Absolutely.
Mark, thank you so much for your incredibly valuable time and your insight. It's been really great having you.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to future discussions.